This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. All across the country, there are more than 40 states that are considering bills to restrict access to voting. And as this is unfolding, Vermont lawmakers are working on a plan to expand access. The bill would make permanent the emergency voting process that was used in last November's election. That was when ballots were sent out to all registered voters because of health concerns associated with the coronavirus. Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballant is a strong supporter of this new legislation.
When we make voting more accessible, more people vote. When we make voting more accessible, our democracy better represents the will of the people. We have to do all we can to ensure that all eligible voters can easily cast their votes and have equal participation in the work of our state and our nation.
Today in the program, we're going to look at this issue from several perspectives, starting with an interview I taped yesterday afternoon with Secretary of State Jim Condos. Secretary of State Jim Condos, welcome back to Vermont Edition. It's great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Bob. I enjoy being with you.
I want to talk to you about what's happening at the national level and what's taking place at the state level. So let's start with the national picture. More than 40 states are currently considering legislation to restrict access to voting. It's being done in a number of ways, requiring that a voter show a photo ID at the polls, restricting the time frame for early voting, in some cases saying it can only happen a week before an election, in some cases saying it can't happen at all. There are also efforts to limit same-day voter registration and limit voting hours. What do you make of these proposals? Why are so many states considering these approaches?
So there are approximately 250-plus bills that are being proposed in over 40 states, as you described. And I would say, first off, that the disappointment for me is that it's using the words voter fraud, voting election integrity, and that these are the measures that would satisfy those issues. Frankly, the issues that we're seeing out there nationwide are really about ballot access and not about voting integrity. And I think that that's something that people should be very careful about. Here in Vermont, we've taken a different approach. We've made it easier for people to be able to vote, and we still have the protections in place. And I think that overall, it's a real concern. I always say, Bob, that the issue of voter fraud in this country is really the true voter fraud is about denying an eligible American the right to cast a ballot. That, to me, is the true voter fraud. Otherwise, there is no systemic voter fraud nationwide. There are occasional allegations. We had seven potential here in Vermont. We only had one. We turned it over to the Attorney General's office. They investigated them. And only one of those seven was actually actionable. And the person that they found was trying to basically prove that he could vote twice. Well, guess what? He got caught.
You mentioned voter fraud. That is something that comes up in all of these states when they talk about some of these proposals. So are you saying that voter fraud is being used as an excuse to limit access to the vote?
Yes, I am. Most cases of voter fraud that are alleged out there usually end up being some kind of an administrative error. For instance, you could have Bob Smith who voted twice. And then you can find out after the fact that it was Bob Smith Jr. and Bob Smith Sr. Or you could have, Bob Smith and Bob Smith again voted. It appears to be the same person. But then when you go into the birth date's wrong, different, the middle initial is different. So there's many cases out there that are alleged. And I think that it's unfortunate that it's come to this. But I really think it's more about ballot access than voter fraud and voting integrity.
Well, Secretary Condos, there is a bill in the U.S. House that was passed recently, now is going to be considered by the U.S. Senate, that establishes basically access to voting standards in all 50 states. It expands and encourages early voting. It allows for same-day voter registration. It restores voting rights to former felons. Is this a good piece of legislation?
Probably, yes, I do think it is a good piece of legislation. It needs some work, but I think overall it's the intent is there, and what they're trying to accomplish with that bill is there. I think from Vermont's standpoint, we already do almost everything that they're asking to be done. And I think that just shows our commitment to ballot access and voter access to the ballot. So I think it would create, for instance, minimum voting registration and access standards. And I always use the example of someone. We are such a mobile society today that someone could be living in California, you know, 2 weeks ago, moved to Virginia a week later, decided he didn't like the Virginia climate and wants to go back up to Vermont, and moves to Vermont a week later after that. Why should there be three different ways of registering to vote when we all have the same three questions? Are you a U.S. citizen? Are you a resident of the state which you're trying to register? And are you 18 or over? Those are the three questions every state asks. That's what we should be basing this on.
What about the argument that the United States Constitution leaves the administration of elections to the individual states, and that this bill goes too far in setting federal standards and therefore is unconstitutional?
I'm laughing, Bob, because that is, they cite Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution, which says the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. That's what the advocates for states' rights advocate all the time. What they forget to tell you is the last half of that same sentence that says, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations. Even at my national association, we've had this debate on several occasions. I'm a firm believer, coming out of a local city council and the state legislature, I'm a firm believer in states' rights. I also believe in the fact that people in this country who are eligible to vote should be given that access and should be given the right to vote. So, you know, there are some cross beings there, but I think in reality what it is, Bob, is we have to focus on the key elements. Voter registration is one. I think we should all have this literally the same voter registration system. And I think we can go from there. But, you know, most of the other stuff that you're seeing in these bills across the country are really about ballot access and trying to suppress that ballot access. You know, we have 45 days of early voting. The congressional bill, H.R. 1, has 15 days. But, you know, we've already talked to the writers of the bill and asked that they say that 15 should be a minimum, that any state that wants can have more than 15. You know, with the issue of drop boxes, Vermont does not have county government, and everything is based on the idea that everybody has county government. And drop boxes should be one drop box per location, per county, based on population. And, you know, we've got one drop box in 175 different towns right now, and expect more in the future.
Well, let's turn our attention to what is happening at the state level. There's legislation at the State House that would basically make permanent the process that Vermont used in the November election. That's when voters were automatically sent ballots, and the voters then could mail them back in. They could drop them off at their town clerk's office, or they could bring the ballots with them when they went to vote on election day itself. Do you support this bill?
Absolutely. We work with the legislature under the leadership of Senator Jeanette White to have this bill come to the floor of the Senate. Universal ballot mailing is the next step for us. And I will always continue to work to increase access to the ballot box for every eligible Vermont voter. But let's look back, Bob, at 2020. Our decision to mail ballots to all active registered voters in the general election resulted in a record-shattering turnout for new and longtime voters, and it allowed them to vote safely, securely, during a pandemic. We know our democracy is stronger when we all participate, and we know that mailing a ballot to all voters increases both voter participation and access for those voters who would otherwise face barriers.
The bill would only affect voting in the general election. It would not affect voting in the primary elections or for towns that hold an Australian ballot on town meeting day. This week, Governor Phil Scott said he thinks the new system should be used for all state and local elections. If it's a good idea for the general election, well, then it's a good idea for the primary election. How do you respond to that?
We don't disagree necessarily. I think it's just the process of how we get there. And there's a lot of the devil in the details that have to be worked out. For instance, in the primary essentially is three elections in one. We are having a Republican primary, a Democratic primary, and a progressive primary. And those are each separate elections on primary day. You're given all three ballots. You're not told to ask for one or the other. You're given all three ballots, and then you have to choose one to vote on, and you have to bring back the other two. And that goes if you mail it. So we already know that the cost of mailing a ballot to all active registered voters for the general election, which is a single ballot, requires about $1.5 million. That's the mailing cost, the envelope cost, the ballot cost, all those pieces put rolled into one. If we were to do it for the general, for the primary, the cost would probably be more, considerably more, because you now have to include three ballots and two envelopes inside the main envelope, which adds weight. So we know that the cost of mailing will be more. So it's going to be at least $1.5 to $2 million more for that as well. Now, what is the cost of our democracy? You could make the case that that's what it is. We also know that in Vermont, we do not have party registration. And one of the pieces would be to have that discussion about whether party registration should be put into effect. I can tell you, Bob, that from past experience over the last 10 years, that the single most common question that we get is when we have the presidential primary and people have to request one or the other ballot. And people are adamant about that they do not like people to know which party they're voting in. But that's one of the things. And we also know that with the primary, it increases our number of defective ballots, although this bill also has a provision to allow for curing of a ballot if it comes back and it's ruled defective. But that doesn't mean it won't happen, and that's a concern as well. So cost, the complexity of the election are the things that happen with the primary. For town meeting day, it's a completely different issue because now you're talking about some towns that have total business is done on the floor. You have other towns that do a hybrid between having floor action and then having an Australian ballot. An Australian ballot is a pre-printed ballot and that people can request as an absentee. And then you have people that use Australian ballot totally. And I think one of the concerns, aside from the other pieces of this, is right now it's a 20-day notice or 20-day period for voting for town meeting day. And I think we would probably prefer that be moved to 30 days to allow time for the ballots to get mailed, received, filled out, and mailed back and received by the town clerk. So there are many different aspects of this that have to be reviewed, and we will be reviewing these over the next year.
Secretary Kondos, some critics of the 45-day early voting period say that it favors incumbents because challengers haven't had the time to make a strong case of why the incumbent should be defeated. How do you respond to those criticisms?
I don't buy that argument. I think that's just a red herring. I think that, just like this past year, we had to change the way we did business in the elections area because of the pandemic. Campaigns had to change and adjust how they were campaigning. And so I think it's really it's not necessarily a valid excuse or argument against 45 days. And I think overall we've seen, as you know, because you used to get the numbers every week, we've seen a huge increase, and this past year, 75% of the voters in this state voted by mail or early drop-off. So I think, I guess I would argue that it was pretty well received by voters.
Secretary of State Jim Kondos, many thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's great to be with you.
Today in the program, we're looking at legislation at the State House that essentially makes permanent the voting procedures that were used in Vermont in last November's general election. That's when ballots were automatically sent out to all registered voters within 45 days of the election. We thought it would be a good idea to see how this change in November affected the work of city and town clerks around the state. And joining us right now is Carol Dawes. Carol is the clerk in Barry City, and she serves as the chairperson of the Legislative Committee of the Vermont Clerks and Treasurers Association. Carol, thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Lovely to be here.
Well, Carol, as we mentioned, last fall, ballots were automatically mailed out to all registered voters. A large number of voters, I think about 75% statewide, either mailed them in early or dropped them off early at their town clerks. How did this change go in Barry City? Was it pretty smooth, or were there some adjustments that had to be made?
Oh, there certainly were adjustments, but it ultimately it went very smooth, and our numbers are pretty much right in line with what you just quoted. We had 65% voter turnout overall, total number of voters participating, which for us is a very high number, and of those, about three quarters of them were absentee. And the balance were people who came and voted in public. And the way I look at the whole thing is that we weren't denying anybody any rights. We were expanding options for people by sending ballots to everybody. Nobody knew 2 months before the election what things were going to be like as far as COVID was concerned. So being able to give people the opportunity to vote from the comfort and safety of their home, if they chose to, was an important option to give them.
Is it pretty clear to you, looking at the data, that this system actually increased voter participation?
Definitely. Definitely.
And any concerns about voter fraud?
I don't have any concerns. I listened to your interview with Secretary Kondos, and it's the numbers really bear it out. With the systems that we have, identify when somebody has been data entered as perhaps voting more than once. We do our due diligence to do the research to figure out what's going on. Here in Barry City, we had an incident where it looked like perhaps a voter had voted more than once or attempted to vote more than once. And yet, upon review, it turns out that, as Secretary Kondos was talking about, perhaps it was a voter with the same name but with a different birth date. So it's actually a different person, and something had been data entered incorrectly. And we were able to make that correction, and there clearly was no voter fraud there.
You mentioned that a lot of ballots came in early. I have to imagine that created a lot of work for your office, but was it work that normally would have happened on Election Day itself, or did you have to hire some new people?
Well, actually, one of the nice things that was put in place for November and is included in this bill that's being considered by the legislature is creating different ways that clerks can process their ballots, depending on what they have for staff, what they have for options with their boards of civil authority. If they want to early process the ballots, either putting them in a ballot box or through a tabulator, they can do so up to 30 days in advance. They don't have to. They can do what works best with their system. Here in Berry City, it worked best for us to wait and process them at the polls. It was easier for me to get people to work at the polls, and so that's what I did. And so having the different options is the most important thing.
As you mentioned, lawmakers are looking at making this new temporary system permanent. Are there any aspects of this voting system that you wish lawmakers could change before they make it permanent?
Well, one of the biggest issues that clerks have it has to do with the way the primaries are run, and Secretary of State Kondos took you through the process, the fact that we have to mail 3 ballots to people, that they have to mail back all their ballots, they have to put the voted one in one envelope and the unvoted ones in another envelope, and if they don't, then their ballot can be considered defective. It would be really nice to look at the way the primary system is run. The committee certainly had conversations around it, but that's going to be a much bigger hurdle than just a one-session discussion.
Well, as you mentioned, in the August primary last year, postcards were sent out to registered voters encouraging them to request a ballot from their town or city clerk. So under those circumstances, if you had a voter who filled out, you know, we had 3 major political parties, the Progressives, the Republicans, and the Democrats, if they filled out one of those ballots but did not include the other 2 to be mailed back, was that a spoiled ballot?
It's what's referred to as a defective ballot. And unfortunately, under current statute, you can't count it. And you can't contact the voter to say, hey, you forgot to return your 2 ballots. Can you get them to me? What's nice about the proposed legislation that's being looked at is it's creating a way for voters to cure a ballot, to fix a defective ballot if that's what happens, if we receive one. It would be as simple as a clerk taking a postcard that lists what the possible defects are, putting a check mark next to the one that matches up what's wrong with a particular ballot, and mailing it to the voter and giving them the information on how they can correct their ballot so it can be counted.
Carol Dawes is the clerk in Berry City. Carol, many thanks for being on the program today and telling us about how this important issue affects you at the local level.
Happy to.
And listeners, you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Your thoughts about early voting, the system that we have, the new law in the legislature being considered would make the emergency temporary system that was used in November, it would make it permanent so that ballots would be sent out to all registered voters only for the general election. There's some debate, as we've heard during the program, whether or not this can be done for the primary election or not, but it would be done for all the general election voting. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Well, joining us right now are 2 people who have different points of view on this new voting system and the use of early ballots. With us are Paul Burns, who's the executive director of the Vermont Public Interest Research Group, commonly known as VPIRG. It's Vermont's largest consumer organization. And also with us is Rob Roper, who's the president of the Ethan Allen Institute, a group that encourages free market solutions to many of the issues facing the state. Paul and Rob, great to have you on the program today.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Bob.
Paul, your organization supports the concept of automatically mailing ballots out to all registered voters. Why is this a good idea?
Well, Bob, we start from the premise that our democracy works best when we all participate. And we found that a huge majority of Vermonters agree with this basic starting point. As a matter of fact, my organization was one of those that commissioned a poll, a statewide poll of Vermonters, took place just several weeks ago. And in that poll, 92% of Vermonters said that it was important to make voting as easy as possible. So that's the starting point. You know, we know that our government works best when it is representative of the voices that we have in our society. We need to make sure that those voices are heard. And mailing every active registered voter a ballot for the general election is the best way that we have found to increase voting. As a matter of fact, you already noted that we had the highest turnout ever in Vermont in 2020 in the middle of a pandemic. 45,000 more voters turned out in Vermont than had ever voted before. And turnout was increased in every single district across the state. So if you like democracy and you believe democracy works best by having more people participate, this is one important tool that we should make permanent in Vermont.
Rob Roper, you're not a fan of early voting. At your website, you wrote this about it. Quote, "This is not a good thing. It's certainly nothing to be proud of. It creates and exacerbates a number of problems with our election process." What are a few of the problems that you have in mind?
Well, talking about the 45-day, if you read the whole article, my critique was of the 45 days of early voting, which I think is too much. I don't have a problem with some early voting, but it makes campaigns more expensive. I think it's an incumbent protection measure to, if people are casting their ballot because they're excited about the presidential election 45 days earlier, they want to vote out Donald Trump, they want to vote for Donald Trump, whatever it is. Well, they haven't done their research because most on the down ticket ballots, because most of those campaigns haven't even started. So people complain that campaigns go on too long. Well, when you have 45 days, 12% of an entire year tacked on, that's an entire time when candidates have to raise money, be out there campaigning, get out the vote efforts. It's really not what we want in a system. I'm in favor of some early voting to give people a chance to cast their ballot in person down at the town clerk's office or something like that. But 45 days is just way too much.
Paul, how do you respond to that? The idea that people need more time to see where the candidates stand on the issues and that perhaps having something as long as a 45-day period really favors the incumbents.
I think this is one more way that we're giving citizens options to participate in the election process. You know, having every voter mailed a ballot doesn't mean that they have to return that ballot through the mail. It doesn't mean that they have to vote even before Election Day. They can still show up to the poll on Election Day if that's important to them. Some people say, hey, something could happen very late in the campaign, and I don't want to cast my ballot early because I might miss that, that last bit of information that could help to inform my vote. Well, you know what? They have the option of waiting then. But if somebody has taken the time and become informed about the candidates to the degree that they feel comfortable and they want to vote 40 days before the election, then I think it's important to allow that, because what we're finding is having greater flexibility in the way that people participate is one important way to increase turnout. And that's, I think, the most important piece here. Not that we tell them what they must know or when they must vote or how they must vote, but giving options to voters is really the best way to go. And Bob, I would say too that, one of the things that we found about people being able to vote at home, when we asked our members, hey, what do you think about this new process? Many of them, of course, said for 2020, it was safer. It was safer for them. It was safer for poll workers and clerks, et cetera. But just as many said that it was convenient and that they found that having the ballot in hand to fill out at their kitchen table, and they took the time to do research, allowed them to become more informed voters too. And that was just as important, having nothing to do with COVID or safety issues. Just, you know, it was a way for them to participate more fully in the process as informed voters.
Rob, I'm wondering, in last August during the primary, we used a slightly different system, and that's when postcards were sent out to voters encouraging them to contact their town or city clerk if they wanted to vote early. So ballots were not automatically sent out to all voters. Do you think that system is any better?
I do think it's better because at least there's some check. I just want to make clear to the DPR listeners, Bob, that I don't have a problem with people voting by mail. What I have a problem with is that this system has absolutely no security systems involved to make sure that the person who for whom the vote is being counted is actually the person who filled out and sent in the ballot. And I wish Carol Dawes were still on the line because she gave testimony to the House Government Operations Committee in which she admitted there isn't any way in our current system that would preclude somebody from making an absentee ballot request on behalf of someone else and then voting on behalf of someone who doesn't otherwise vote in the election. So basically, the example I always give is, you know, my kids are in college. Their absentee ballots come here. There's nothing stopping me from filling out my kids' ballots and sending them in. There's no way that that's going to be detected. It's certainly not going to be followed up on, and I'm not going to get caught. And those are the kind of things that we need to make sure that our system is able to deal with. Because, yes, if I tie somebody up in their basement and keep them from going to the polls, that's one form of voter suppression. But if I cancel out their vote by casting a ballot in somebody else's name, that's the same thing as tying somebody up in their basement. And in fact, I would say it's worse because if I tie you up, at least you know that I did it. If I cancel out your vote by voting somebody else's ballot, you're walking around with a little sticker on your lapel thinking everything's hunky-dory when it's not.
Now, Rob, Secretary of State Kondo said there were virtually no cases of voter fraud in 2020. So how does that sort of align with what you're saying?
He can't really say that. It's an article of faith that it doesn't happen. It wasn't just Carol Dawes. John Odom, who's the city clerk for Montpelier, was asked specifically about if I get a ballot for somebody who does not otherwise vote, and in a high turnout election, this was a very high turnout election, 35% of the people don't vote. So that means 35% of the ballots, if we send them out to everybody on the list, are going to be floating around out there. Graduates of UVM and Middlebury and all the colleges who've left the state, their ballots, if they're registered to vote in Vermont, are floating around out there. And Odom said, we can't stop them. Meaning somebody, a fraudster, from gathering up those ballots and sending them in somebody else's name. There's no mechanism for doing that. And I think it's crazy that we would be putting into a law a system with such a gaping hole. 75% of the ballots are now going to be cast this way. And there's no verifiable information that the person who sent the ballot in is the person for whom the vote is being counted. It's crazy.
We've got a lot of callers who would like to weigh in on this issue today. And Paul, I want to give you a chance in a moment to respond to some of Rob's concerns. But let's start off with Lee, who is calling from Rutland Town. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I've worked at the polls for over 40 years in our town, and I think I know a little something about voting, but what I'm thinking mainly is, you know, whether I want to vote or choose to vote or not is nobody's business. It is not the town clerk's business. It is not the Secretary of the State's business. It is my business. And for the state to spend money and float out all the ballots that they think people should get to entice them to vote early, at least early, or at least vote by mail, is just plain wrong and foolish. And you've just heard the very reasons of security that have concerned me for a long time. So that's really my opinion. And you can cite all the facts that you want, but it comes right down to my personal preference. If I want to vote already in place, there's ways for people who are, you know, in the hospital or homebound to get their vote at home and get it into the town clerk's office and be counted. Why reinvent the wheel? This is a personal choice and a personal option, and I cannot understand for the life of me why it is any state or even the legislature's business whether I choose to vote or not. That's
okay. Today we're taking a look at a law, or rather a bill, at the legislature that would make a law the permanent voting that was used in November's election, where all registered voters would be automatically sent a ballot. Talking to us right now about this, Rob Roper, who is president of the Ethan Allen Institute, and also Paul Burns, the executive director of the Vermont Public Interest Research Group. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Paul, I want to give you a chance to talk about the idea of fraud that Rob raised in the previous segment.
Sure, Bob. I think it's important for listeners to understand that over the last 50 years in this country, about 3 billion votes have been cast. There have only been about 1,500 documented cases of fraud, many of which, of course, were perpetuated by Republicans, but this is not a one-party issue in terms of who causes the problem. But it is almost vanishingly small. That's a fraud rate of about 0.0000005%. 1,500 ballots out of 3 billion cast. There is no widespread voter fraud in this country. President Trump and his supporters tried to make that case. They had over 60 lawsuits filed in the wake of the 2020 general election, and each one of them failed. There just is no such thing as widespread voter fraud, and Secretary Kondos already outlined the situation in Vermont, which is to say there was no fraud identified except for one person who was trying to show that it could be done. To Rob's point, though, about ballots floating around, there are no ballots floating around out there. They're being sent to the last address of a known voter registered in the state. And if an individual takes that ballot, fills it out and suggesting that they are somebody else, that is illegal. It is a crime. It is punishable in this state. And if they fill it out and then that voter goes to the polling place to cast their ballot, it will be caught. They will identify the fact, at least, that their vote has already been registered, and that will trigger a process of investigation and potentially a criminal prosecution against Rob if he were to, you know, send in his kid's ballot, as there should be. You know, we should not tolerate that kind of fraud. But it's not as though they're just floating around out there and left on street corners, these ballots. They go to specific addresses, and they cannot be forwarded. And this is that plus the criminal penalties, I believe, does a pretty good job of preventing any kind of fraud in the state. Might there be a single individual occasionally who tries to get away with this? I think, yeah, there may be. The human nature being what it is, we can't discount that possibility. But nobody is going to engage in this practice with the idea that they're going to change the outcome of an election, because it would be incredibly difficult to do that in a big way. And you can't plan on an election coming down to a one-vote margin. Yes, it happens occasionally, but that's not – you don't win a campaign by planning to commit fraud with one vote. When it gets bigger than that, as we've seen in other states, for instance, it has been caught. And so, you know, humans may try to game the system somehow, but we have rules against that. We have laws against that. And we have no reason to believe that fraud is a significant issue at all. You know, what is more significant is the fact that many people don't participate in the election. That's always going to be their choice. But it should be something to be celebrated that 45,000 more people voted in Vermont in 2020 than ever voted before. That is, unlike Rob, I believe that is something to be celebrated.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Jody, who's calling from Dummerston. Hi, Jody. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. And First of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Condos for his work on elections and give him a big shout out because he's done a fantastic job. I think I agree with one of the first callers that we already do have a system in place right now that anybody who wants to vote can vote. And I do have concerns with the mass mailings. However, what I'm really afraid of right now is the direction that the legislature is going into, and Governor Scott even kind of mentioned it in his remarks this week, is that this will get to town meetings. And town meetings are such an important part of the small communities, not your Burlingtons, not your Brattleboros or whatever. And if they go to absentee balloting or whatever, we've lost a lot of our social capital here. And already, because of Act 46, the consolidation bill, we've lost one half of our town meetings and not being able to talk about a school budget, et cetera. And boy, I really worry about putting a nail in the coffin for town meetings with some of these proposals. Thank you.
Yeah, Jody, I've got a question for you because there were a couple of towns on town meeting this year. Middlesex comes to mind. That actually had a Australian ballot vote on whether or not to hold a floor meeting on many items in the future. Are you concerned that voting that way on the floor meetings is going to end up with towns not holding them in the future?
Yes, I'm very concerned about it because it is a place where you get to see your neighbors and, you know, after the winter. And you get to argue and discuss and disagree with your neighbors. But then you get, at least in my town of Dummerston, you get to sit down and have lunch with those people you've talked to. And I've had other people telling me in the past, and I've been going to town meetings since 1970, that, you know, we really do agree on some of these things, but maybe we won't on this. And you remain friends. You're not like the national politics.
Jody, thank you very much for your phone call. Rob, do you share any of Jody's concerns?
No, but I don't. I think she makes some good points. But I want to get back to Paul's point about fraud. You know, there's a reason why the states that have been doing this for a while, Colorado and Utah and Washington, they have security measures built into their laws. They have signature verifications, you know, so when you send in your ballot, that has to, the signatures have to match. They have laws banning ballot harvesting. They have laws that allow you to cure the ballot, which I'm happy to say that S-15 actually has some ballot cure language in there. I think that's a good thing. And they make it easier to purge the list.
Hey, Rob, could you explain what that means? When you say curing of ballots, what does that mean?
Oh, if you send in a ballot and you have you forgot to sign it or you put it in the wrong envelope and whatnot, you'll get a call. And they'll say, hey, you messed it up. You want to come down and fix it. And in our last election, the primary, a lot of people's ballots here in Vermont were just thrown away. So that's a good thing. But this law, there's no signature verification provision in it. There's no ban on ballot harvesting. And, you know, Paul was saying, you know, one or two votes isn't going to help an election. Well, we just saw the Speaker of the House, the Vermont Speaker of the House, lost her race by 19 votes with 45 days of early voting. And, yes, the ballots are floating around out there. That means somebody who's wanted to harvest ballots to swing that election the other way would have to harvest one ballot every 2 days in order to do it. That's not a whole lot of sweat that goes into that. So if we're going to do this, and as I said, I'm not opposed to the idea of mailing ballots to people and having people vote by mail, so long as we have security measures put in place. Those are some of the measures that should be included in this bill.
And Rob, we should mention that the bill that has been passed by the Senate does prohibit political candidates or paid staff people of political campaigns from collecting, as you say, harvesting ballots. That would be illegal under the bill that passed the Senate. Let's see if we can get one more quick call in from Matthew in Aalborg. Hey, Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hello. Yeah, I support universal ballot mailing because, you know, people with disabilities need to accessibility to be able to vote. And for my experiences of it, I meant the person with disabilities, and I'll put that right there out there so people know that I had an awesome time with it. It went through like a hitch. I thank Jim Condos and the election staff and Paul Burns for putting this up at the forefront of this whole voting accessibility because people with disabilities in Vermont need this bad.
Matthew, thank you very much for your phone call. Paul, we're almost out of time. Rob mentioned matching signatures. What do you think of that idea?
Well, in other states, we've seen the signatures used as a means of disenfranchising voters. Look, people's signatures change over time, and oftentimes if they're comparing it to what you signed when you got your license, driver's license initially, that may look quite different than the signature that you put on your ballot. So we don't think that that is necessary. It's not a good thing for us to be moving forward with in Vermont. So I just don't buy that that's an issue. Rob is raising these same questions that have been used at the national level. As you heard, 250 bills in 43 states aimed at voter suppression now. It's the biggest attack on voting rights in this country since Jim Crow. I'm really happy that Vermont is moving in a different direction to make voting a little bit easier and more convenient for folks. And two-thirds of Vermont voters agree that we should make mailed balloting permanent policy in the state. And that's why, you know, we're very happy to support S-1515. That's the bill that passed just an hour ago in the state Senate, got final approval there by a vote of 27-3. So I think we're going to see this in Vermont, and I'm really happy about it and happy for Vermont voters.
Rob, we're almost out of time. You've made it clear several times during the program, it's not early voting that you are opposed to. It's the idea that it's a 45-day period for early voting. In your mind, what would be an appropriate time frame?
Oh, I think if you had 10 business days before the election, that would work. As for the ballot harvesting, you do raise the point that it would be illegal for paid staffers of candidates not to ballot harvest. But I'm not really worried about that so much as I'm worried about groups like Paul's that are groups that will go out and systematically harvest ballots throughout the state based on whatever their ideology might be.
Well, the bill did pass the Senate today. We'll be following it as it makes its way through the House. It's been a great discussion of Vermont's early voting law and how Vermont is quite different from many other states in the country when it comes to access to voting. Many thanks to our guests today, Paul Burns and Rob Roper. Really appreciate you taking the time to be on the program today.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.